Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. We are fresh off of a historic trade deadline week. So naturally, we got some new faces in new places. They played some games with the new teams. We talk about some of the debuts and some of the early returns of big names and smaller ones, get into some of our early thoughts there. And then we get into some unrivaled talk. Interesting action across the weekend. We have an unrivaled trade. What does that mean for the teams involved and for Rose BC in particular, who traded a player but didn't receive one back? Is someone making a return? I guess we'll see. The one-on-one bracket was officially revealed. We talked through some of our favorite matchups there, and we just have a lot of excitement around Phantom BC on the broader sense. Aaliyah Boss is really good. Kelsey Plum is really good. Are they the best team in Unrivaled? We talk about that and more. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Ran, toss some hoop, buddy. Let's go.
All righty. We are getting right to the nitty-gritty, Steve. We are coming off of a historic trade deadline week. The NBA PR tweeted out most deals that we've seen during the deadline week ever, or at least in recent memory. And thus, over the weekend, over the last few days, we've gotten some debuts. We've got players that have gotten their first games under the belt. We got some that played two or three games with the new spots. And so we want to take the first bit of the pot to talk about some of the big debuts and early returns from players that we've seen so far. And I think it is fitting to start with some of the stars that were moved. Most notably, I feel like we've talked a good bit about Cleveland over the past couple of pods. We've now gotten to see James Harden in a Cleveland Cavaliers uniform, Steve. Two games so far as a recording with James for James Harden as a Cav. 23 points, 8 assists, and a steal against the Sacramento Kings. 22 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, and 3 blocks against the Denver Nuggets there. It has been fun watching James Harden kind of find himself within this Cleveland offense to kind of kick things off. Is very much, okay, this is still Donovan Mitchell's. I'm cool operating off the ball. I'll run these pick and rolls if you need me to. And then Donovan Mitchell goes to the bench and it just becomes the Harden show. And I think that has been a fascinating development, probably isn't the right word. It's been fascinating to kind of watch the switch flip for him, depending on what lineups he's in. But I think some of the early returns for me, it has just been his comfort in pick and roll. Like, I've enjoyed what him and Jared Allen have already looked like so far. And their two games together.
You seem surprised by this. I feel like we talked about the appeal of James Harden for the Cleveland Cavaliers and his ability to play and pick and roll and what that would mean for them. And I think what you've seen is him being able to unlock Jared Allen. And I think he has a stronger chemistry with Jared Allen because of his pace when he comes off screens. When he's able to kind of get downhill, he's not as fast as Darius Garland. So you go to high pick and roll, Jared Allen can kind of get into that pocket. And now James Harden takes a couple dribbles. You reopen the pocket pass. And now, to your point with Cleveland's offense, with how they're able to have, kind of have the wheel setting, their spacing, their cutting, it opens up cuts if the weak side is in. And so, especially against Sacramento, you saw Sacramento try and cycle and get to different things defensively. They couldn't quite hit the right buttons. And so that just adds a layer to Cleveland's attack. And so this is where you get the benefit of, we have Donovan Mitchell, we have our pace, we have our tempo. We now have James Harden, who's going to engage the defense at some point. Even if we get him into a dribble handoff and the big is back and it's a drop, he's going to get attention at some point. He's going to hold the weak side, and that's going to open things up. So I think that's been the biggest thing. It's like, it's kind of what I was trying to preach. It's like, James Harden is a playmaker. It's a lot easier as a coach, no offense to Darius Garland, to game plan on how I'm going to guard him. It's going to be drop, right? Until you make enough plays or make enough shots to change what we want to do. With James Harden, you're going to think and you're going to engage, and it's going to open things up.
I think to bounce off of your last point, Steve, between Harden and Garland, we talked a little bit about this last week, so I won't hang here too long. But there is just like a baked-in level of aggression that James Harden has that kind of dictates defensive coverages in a way that Garland, to your point, kind of has to get there. You need to see 3 pull-ups go down before it's like, okay, cool. With James Harden, he steps on the court. It's like, ooh, do we want to play drop? Because he can just kind of get downhill and get into some of the foul drawing. He can get into the pocket passing. If he strings the big along long enough, that might open up lobs. If we switch against him, as we saw with his very first basket as a Cleveland Cavalier, you get the pick and roll on the left side of the floor. Dylan Cartwell switches. They start down nice. You get the switch. James Harden's like, all right, cool. Rook, you're having yourself a quality campaign. I don't really care. I'm stepping back. I'm knocking this down. you don't always have that level of aggression baked in with Darius Garland. I think the skill is certainly there, but that aggression isn't. And so it's been kind of fun to watch when he taps into that. And I think bouncing off of everything else that you said there, what stood out to me, you mentioned the pacing in pick and roll with James Harden. And watching him and Jared Allen already develop this level of chemistry, not a surprise to your earlier point, but it has been fun watching that play out. And I think something we talked about in our trends episode not too long ago is pick and rolls being ran higher up the floor. James Harden is one of the ball handlers around the top three in terms of how high his pick and rolls are ran on average. And now having that with Jared Allen, who is really good at flipping the angle of a pick, making sure he gets contact. I can slow play the roll if I need to. James Harden, to your point, has a cadence that allows Jared Allen to get right back into that pocket, and he can jet out of there when he wants to as well. He is still a mobile big at the end of the day. It's easy to see how that combination works and the way that Cleveland is able to kind of play out of that. Even to the Kings debut, Steve, 23 pick and rolls ran by James Harden against Sacramento, 1.3 points per possession ran, points per possession generated on those trips for Cleveland. It was an insane effort. Wasn't the same efficiency in the Denver game, but even if you look at the quality of those looks and watching how the pick and roll plan kind of shifted in Denver, we're going to run these even higher. We're going to sprinkle in some Spain or stack pick and roll to see if we can get some guards back screening Nikola Jokic. You saw a little bit more aggression from James Harden, looking for the floater a little bit more, looking to get downhill a little bit more. And so the shots didn't fall, but the process felt good. And that, again, makes me feel even better about what this is ultimately going to be. A question I would toss to you, Steve. How much has the lineup combinations this Harden's been there? How much has that popped for you? It's felt like a lot of like three guard stuff with Donovan Mitchell. You haven't really seen a ton of that in the Harden lineups as of yet. Like, I'm curious, like, has anything on the lineup front popped for you so far?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of different ways they can go about it if you're Cleveland. One, you know, Kenny Atkinson loves a three guard lineup. Two, I think the bigger thing is like being able to have James Harden anchor some of these second unit lineups and play with different players. And how much is he going to play with Dennis Schroeder? We'll see how that develops. But I also liked, in especially the Sacramento game, hey, we can kind of just go four-guard lineups. Against Denver, we can kind of go four-guard lineups, technically, depending on how you feel about Jalen Tyson to a degree. But we can kind of have Harden, Tyson, Merrill, Schroeder, Jared Allen out there. And I think it gives them a little bit of versatility because we have the spacing. All these guys know what we want to do. We are able to drive the ball, and we can keep pressure on you. And so I think the big thing with James Harden, if you watched over the first couple games, it's not just so much playing with, you know, the bigs. Watch the random screens from the guards. It's been a part of what Cleveland does anyways. But now, okay, Jalen Tyson especially is able to kind of screen for James Harden, understand team switching, rescreen, and get a roll that way. Jalen Tyson's really good at screening and opening things up. But Craig Porter Jr. being able to mix in a screen, you know, randomly after you defend an action, and you're able to get a slip that way. So I think it's that kind of interplay, which is good. Now, it gets interesting because how much our team's just going to want to live with switching against Cleveland? How much is that going to be the recipe they live with just to, hey, we need to stay out of rotation? Can they use their guards to kind of poke at that? Can they find a different way to get defenses away from that? It's probably where my mind goes. But I think the versatility, you know, quote-unquote James Harden at the four, whatever Kenny Atkinson is messing with, helps them, I think. Especially, you know, because they don't have both of their bigs right now. But I think the more lineup versatility they have, the better off they'll be.
Okay, I like it. Last couple things for me on the Harden front. To your point, Steve, keeping an eye on what the switching volume looks like against Cleveland, against Harden in particular. Team switched about 26% of his pick and rolls in the Sacramento game. That was down to about 17% against Denver. But again, that is a huge part of their diet anyway. And so we'll keep track of that. And then the question I'll toss to you, as kind of alluded to, the beauty of having Harden and Donovan Mitchell together. How have you felt about their usage together so far? It hasn't felt like a ton of Donovan screening for Harden, Harden screening for Donovan yet. Would you like to see that perk up, or are you just kind of in wait and see mode with those two being used together?
I mean, I think it's wait and see mode because you don't just automatically use them together. I think the best action they've done is being able to run Donovan Mitchell setting a pin down for James Harden into James Harden getting a dribble handoff. And now, okay, if James Harden gets downhill and you help on that roll, it's a skip to Donovan Mitchell. I think it's more important for them to be a wave more than particularly be in action together because it depends on who's guarding who. You know, ideally, you're going to have your top two defenders on those two.
On those two.
In the best case scenario. So you're going to end up with a switch in pure actions. Now, you could manipulate it, try and get a switch, and then get them in action together. But I don't know if that's as valuable as taking Denver and saying, hey, Jamal Murray, would you like to switch against James Harden? Okay, if we're putting Sam Merrill one pass away, you're going to switch and double. Now that opens things up for you. And so I think that's kind of the advantage of basketball that James Harden can bring to the table that maybe didn't get as much consideration at the start, where, okay, how many people do you want to guard James Harden? If we get a switch that you don't like with our spacing principles, is that just opening up a play for us? Like, I think when you watch in the first two games, how many times you've seen James not really have to dribble a ton to be able to create a look for someone else? And I think that helps Cleveland in the half court. So I think that's where it's less, it needs to be Donovan and James together, or just has to be, use them as pressure points. And like for me, I was more happy that Donovan Mitchell drove a lot in that first Sacramento game more than anything else.
Boy, did he. Particularly that fourth quarter, like he turned on his head. James Harden knocks down some big threes in that fourth quarter as well. It's fun watching those two flow in that manner. So just wanted to ask your opinion on that, see how you felt about it. Last thing I'll mention, I think it's 119 offensive rating so far in the Harden minutes. It's a 124 defensive rating in the Harden minutes so far per PvP stats. Don't think that is all his fault, the latter number, but I am keeping an eye on what the effort is going to look like there. Yeah, I do think he's going to be a big part of their switching in particular, but he's got to hold up. So I'll just note that very quickly.
What have you thought about the defense from James Harden so far?
It hasn't been great, but I mean, I never expected great. So I think for me, it's funny in the first half of that Kings game in particular, there were some off-ball things where I was like, hey, you don't really want these to perk up in your first game here, but it's also your first game here. But then you get some of the possessions where you have someone's kind of sitting up at the top of the key and James Harden's providing nail help and he's very active. It's like, okay, see, this is more of what you want. Like, I'm not expecting all defense caliber stuff, but just kind of do your job, do your work early and get out of there. Because in theory, you're going to have Jared Allen behind you. And once Evan Mobley gets healthy, you're going to have both of those guys behind you or just involved in some kind of way. So I don't think you're going to need like the A-plus James Harden defensive effort for what you need. Just do your job. Type B. And so like there were some things that popped for me in that Kings game in particular, a little bit in the Denver game, but again, that's why I'm not waving the red flag like, oh, this is cooked, it's not gonna work. It's just like, hey, let's make sure we're at a consistent level here.
I think if you go to the fourth quarter of that Denver game, the James Harden early rotations, he's just like, oh, I'm in, so whatever happens, but I'm gonna be here, so Jokic, that's fine, I'm meeting you, we'll do our job.
Continue.
There we go. That's all we needed. Let's move to the Western Conference. I'd like to talk about Jaren Jackson Jr., Steve. Because I was enamored with Utah making the swing for Jaren, as we talked about in the last pod. Hey, let's get a star in the building without giving up any of our high, super high value stuff. And to watch the debut against Orlando and to see how they schemed him open immediately, it was just beautiful to see. And like the progression for me, opening possession of the game, you have Ace Bailey coming from the corner of the screen for Jaren. He goes one-on-one against Paolo, doesn't score, but I was like, okay, this is very Utah. I'm going to space this kind of five out. I'm going to use our guard screen. This is fine. A little bit later, they go to the same thing. Ace hits, gets the switch for Jaren. Jack Jr. gets Desmond Bane, gets a basket. Against Miami, it's a similar bit to start that game. Going to have Ace screen for Jaren. And then Jaren kind of flows up a screen in the middle of the floor from Yusuf Nurkic. Because of how Miami was defending it, it didn't really work, but it was just kind of cool to see what the progression of that particular action or just that alignment can be for him, just to move him around the board, get him some touches in the middle of the floor, and let him attack. And so just off of that, I was like, okay, I'm kind of in on what this could look like from a scheme perspective. Steve, what have been some of your early impressions of the Jaren Jackson experience in Utah?
Well, I mean, I think what you highlighted early on as far as how they're using him by screening for him, with the transition flares, even some of the pin downs they run, I think that's a little bit different for Jaren to a degree. It's kind of an odd sensation because usually when you have a new place and like a new face in a new place, there's a different feel, or it feels like, oh, this is like this person's doing so much different things here. Some of it's just Jaren Jackson feeling more comfortable within what Utah does as far as, hey, I have a matchup, let me get the ball in the post. Teams are not necessarily doubling as much as they did when he was in Memphis. So he's now able to kind of get back to attacking matchups, turning the corner, trying to hit first. And so being able to kind of get those elbow catches, being able to get up and down, pace and transition and attack. You know, I love when they just have, you never know what it's going to be chaotically. He's running the wing. It might be a pin down for him. As he's in the middle, he might get a flare. And so it's more so just the ethos of Utah, I think. And so while they may want and eventually get to him at the five, I think it's important for him to kind of get used to playing the four next to Larry
and get used to how Will Hardy kind of uses his personnel, uses his bigs together, and mixes and matches that way. And so it's hard to say, wow, this is so much new stuff. It's not like an entirely new concept, or it's not like new things are introduced for Jaren Jackson Jr. He just feels comfortable within what Utah wants to do. I think, you know, they have a lot of possessions. His drives feel better, and he's felt pretty good.
Yeah. I'd say just the bounce off of what you said there, Steve, to the help point. Help shown on about 17% of his drives in the Orlando debut. That is one of the lowest figures that he's had in the game this season. Up to about 63% in the game against Miami. But you think about the overall context of what Memphis was, certainly lower than what he's accustomed to. Like, we talked about this in some of our Ja Morant conversations earlier in the year, where, yes, you want to see Ja play better. Also, he is seeing help at a rate that only like two other players in the league is seeing at this point. So I think to that comfort point, just having more space seems helpful. And I think the way that Utah just designs their offense as a concept certainly helps with that. Again, I still would like to see him at the five at some point. But if you are going to have him next to a big, it helps that it is a big like Yusuf Nurkic, who you can space above the break because of how good of a screener and how good of a passer he is. Or Kevin Love. Kevin Love had himself a time against Orlando, by the way. So much so that Utah was like, hey, maybe we don't need you in this Miami game, big dog. Let's relax. No revenge game for you. But similar bit with Kevin Love, to where you can space him above the break or space him on the wing. He can knock down shots, or he can be used as a passing hub. And so now Jaren could just have these duck ins or just have these clear side attacks. And depending on who's one pass away from him, like, as long as it's not Isaiah Collier, all due respect, who has been playing well, but like teams just treat him a certain way as a shooter. As long as it's not him, like, you kind of have to think about where you're sending this help from. And because Utah spaces and cuts and screens so well off the ball on top of this, ask Orlando how often Utah got free with backdoor cuts and just cuts in general. You can generate good stuff out of that. So, like, I do like this concept for Jaren. I'm excited about what the offense is going to look like. Did you have any I guess last thing I'll say before I toss you a question on Jaren's defense. I'm agreeing with you. Like, I don't think there's nothing super new when it comes to the Jaren package and how he's being utilized. We'll note, received 9 off-ball screens in the open in that debut against Orlando that tied a season high for him. And so I do wonder if that is just going to be a heavier piece of his diet. I would imagine so with how Utah uses their offense.
But it is, just because of how Utah plays. I mean, he's going to get a lot of those pin downs and flares and be involved. And even, you know, running 4-5 pick and roll, that's the advantage of playing him at the 4. Have a big screen for him. So like, he's going to be more involved. I think those numbers will go up. But continue.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, I'll toss it to the defense, Steve. How have you felt about the Jaren defense experience? Is it kind of what you expected in terms of how they're utilizing him, or just how have you kind of felt early on with it?
It's going to take time for us to get the true impact of that with the way the Utah Jazz have played defense this season. And so I think the biggest thing that stands out is his ability to communicate and his work to try to rotate early. But I don't think we're going to feel the full impact at any point in time this season, in my opinion. Have you felt about it?
No, I think that's fair. And that's why I was clear to ask about like the utilization versus has Jaren transformed his defense? Because frankly, he is just not going to do so with this personnel right now. But I think it's tied into him pretty much logging all of his minutes at the 4 so far. Like, I can just kind of roam. Like, that's where the Orlando matchup was interesting, because like, on one hand, you're matched up at the 4, you are just guarding Paolo Banchero, so you're just going to have to absorb some of those drives and some of those attacks. On the other end, if Paolo isn't involved, or if someone else is in for Paolo, now you get to see Jaren just kind of roaming around lower on the floor, contesting shots. And so, like, not a super surprise to me. Like, I'm curious to see how much switching he gets into. Like, that was sprinkled in the Orlando game in particular. Not a super high volume. Utah has been one of the highest volume switching teams in the league this year, and was last year as well. And so I do wonder, like, how they're going to mix. We want to keep you near the rim to challenge stuff versus this is kind of what we've been doing with this personnel and this collective size that we have, 3 through 5. But I think he has been fine within what they have asked him to do. And to your point, going to have to get to next year, I think, when they actually want to make the step in the standings to really get a gauge on, like, how impactful the defense is going to be. And that is also going to be tied to, are we bringing Walker Kessler back? How much is that going to cost? And if we don't bring Walker Kessler back, who is going to be the big that we place alongside Jaren to continue to unlock some of the off-ball roaming and things that he can do? So just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Real quick. I do have a thought. Why did everyone get bored and decide to yell about tanking? What happened there? What's going on there? So here's the thing, right?
Okay.
I just have questions. Okay, one, teams are going to try and figure out how to do what they need to do to get to the spot they want to get to, right? Mm-hmm. One, I'm happy we're seeing Jaren Jackson Jr. and Lauri Markkanen still playing at this stage of the season. You can't shut them all the way down. That's fantastic. Do you want these guys playing 32 minutes a night with the Utah Jazz record? I'll ask you that question first, Nikias. Is that something we want?
Like, I wouldn't mind it, because I think for me, and it's funny coming off the backs of Utah beating Miami, which fresh off the Friday Rams.
Hold on. One at a time. Do you want these guys playing heavy minutes at 17 and 37?
I guess define heavy, I guess, would kind of be my thing. Is this just 30, 33, 34 plus?
Yeah.
I mean, kind of, yeah. At least for, like, Jaren, like, you are on a new team. I would like for you to get reps before we eventually, like, shut you down, at the very least. So, like, I'm kind of fine with that. I think for me, and I'll toss this back to you quickly, like, I do kind of find myself more in the Matt Mora HP basketball, kind of like this. I find myself more aligned with, if you are going to sit the guys, then sit the guys. If you are going to play the guys, play the guys. It is kind of weird to, like, we are playing you 2.5 quarters and then you're just done. I don't think it's inherently bad. But, like, I do, like, that is kind of odd, and I understand why people are like, hey, what's going on here? So, like, I would probably prefer one or the other. But, like, neither one of them really bother me. Like, if they just say, Jaren, you're not playing, like, I'm not surprised by that. And if Jaren's just getting his regular minutes, like, I'm fine with that.
That's where we were. That's why that everyone thing changed. Guys weren't playing. And they said, hey, you can't do that anymore. And we got away from that. And now it's like, okay, we'll do this. And it's like, nope. We don't like that either. I don't understand. Because here's the thing. That Utah team that didn't play their guys in the fourth, they were up on Orlando still late, almost won that game. And then they beat Miami. So, you know, everyone yells at Washington. They beat Detroit by a lot. I'm just confused by the passion that's being displayed here.
It's your favorite word, Steve, in this context. It is the hashtag principle.
It's not even the principle. It's just something for people to get mad about, because if someone gets hurt, like Keontae George got hurt in the Orlando game. No one talks about that.
He was already in minutes restriction and twisted.
Yeah, you don't want that. You don't want to see that. So, yeah, you want an opportunity for the young guys to play? They get some reps? I just don't think it's that worthy of getting that upset about. That might just be where I'm at mentally right now. But what do you want?
No, I think that's fair. Like, I think it has certainly become more of a conversation point. I think for me, I understand where the criticism comes from. I don't think it is, like, unfair. I ultimately land on, like, hey, just pick one for me, this personal preference. But, like, I also recognize, like, me, you, and others, we're going to be watching these games anyway. And so it is easy for me to say, like, I don't really care that much about this, because if I turn on Utah and Jaren is playing, I'm like, cool, Jaren is playing. What does this look like? If he's not playing, all right, cool. What are we getting from Kyle Filipowski? What are we getting from Cody Williams, et cetera? From Washington, if I get to see Keyshawn George, Trey Johnson, cool. Let's see how these young dudes continue to develop, et cetera. If I'm going to get a bunch of Will Riley, all right, cool. How many shots is he making? You know what I mean? Like, for me, it doesn't matter. But I also have to, like, take the step back and say, like, okay, everyone does not engage with basketball the way that I do. And so I get where the complaints are coming from on that front.
Man.
And I think this is more
you being real kind. They're not watching those teams. We can be honest.
See, that was going to lead to my second part.
They're just something to be mad about. You're not watching the Utah Jazz right now. Be honest with you. You want these teams to win right now? You go, because if they go on a winning streak, you'd be like, well, they won 8 games in a row in February and took themselves out of it. It's results based content. And I don't enjoy it. All right? That's all I'm saying.
That's what I was going to lead into, though. Because, like, we are a week and a half removed from, how do I want to phrase this? We get Hornets, Wizards, and it's like, man, you must be bored if you went to that game. And now we are talking about the competitive purity of Washington sitting folks. And it's just like, like, I get it's a bit of a straw man, because, like, the people that are saying X may not be the same people saying Y. So, like, I get that in a literal sense. But it is just kind of funny to hear nobody cares about these teams because they're bad. And then it's like, hey, why aren't these bad teams playing anybody? We need to punish them. We need to reform the system type B, which there may be room for, like, reforming of the system if the league feels it's a big enough issue. But it's just kind of funny to hear at the very least. But yeah. Well, we're not going to be resting at all. So we want you to stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more debuts and early returns for some new faces in new places. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot, and we have some more debuts slash early returns to sift through. We go to Boston, Steve. Nikola Vucevic has played a couple of games for the Boston Celtics at this point. 11 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals against the Miami Heat. 11 points, 6 rebounds, and a block against the New York Knicks. That Celtics-Knicks game didn't go the way they thought it was going to go. But Steve, I'll toss it to you to kick things off. How have you felt about the Vuce experience in Boston so far?
I mean, I felt like a tale of two games to a degree. I think against Miami, you kind of got more of a sense, more of a flavor of what Nikola Vucevic can bring to the table for the Celtics, mm-hmm. especially where he can add some balance to Boston in the half court, depending on how teams want to guard Boston, right? So if you want to trap Jaylen Brown in pick and roll, Vucevic can kind of get a role. Defense are going to have to respect that role and pay attention to it. And he gets a post up, how much attention are you paying to it based on the matchup? And then I think when he's able to see help, they have cutters. And so I think his passing, he may not be as much of a hub as he's been in previous stops, but I think his quick decisions and his passing fit if Boston has teams rotation, if Boston has teams showing help. And especially when Miami was switching so heavy, you saw Vucevic kind of transform into Orlando Vucevic for a little bit, where he's like, oh no, we're not picking and popping. It's screen, roll, seal. I'm going to hit somebody. I'm going to get a matchup. And so I could punish teams by getting these switches, getting deep in the paint. Boston was able to find them deep in the post at various points in that one. So it's like, okay, that's something else that can lift them, especially if he's playing with the second unit, where if teams are switching or we're looking for something in the half court, we can kind of throw it to him in the post and play off of it. It was interesting to watch him like kind of operate at times where it's like, okay, I'm going to do some dribble handoff stuff. But one time he was like, actually, I'm going to swing this and go pin down for Jaylen Brown. That seems like the right move to make. So that part was interesting. I think defensively, you kind of see that they should have enough of an infrastructure to where he can just do his job on defense, because Boston, in theory, is a team that likes to show help anyways. And so if you're trying to attack them one-on-one, they're going to help and rotate and recover and play out of it. You know, if he's in a drop, there's usually going to be bodies to help. That's what you felt in the Miami game. Now, in the New York game, where I say tale of two games, Jose Alvarado was like, hey, I'm enjoying you being here. And Jalen Brunson was saying, I'm enjoying you being here. And so the danger becomes, okay, and me watching that New York game was like, what's his coverage going to be? Because it felt like he was at the level, which he's comfortable with, but then it kind of turned into a drop. And then it just never felt like the same that we saw against Miami. And so it's one of those things where, okay, the defense has to hit at least a certain level for you to pop as much as you can in Boston. And then New York was kind of like, okay, we're going to dare you to make some of these shots. So the spacing didn't necessarily have the same impact it did. So I think overall a good debut. I think he is additive to what Boston does. I think Joe Mazzulla was pretty clear about that. Like, yeah, Vooch is good, but like we have bigs who do certain things. He gives a different flavor. And so I think he's going to help them, especially in the playoffs and half court, just kind of hold up defensively.
Okay, I'm right there. I guess quick question I'll toss to you is, you mentioned different things with him defensively. What do you think his best coverage is ultimately going to be? I think obviously the ideal world, we want you to be able to do multiple things. But like, what do you think is option one for Vooch in this Boston context?
Oh, I mean, it's just the one where I'm near the level and you don't necessarily know how far I'm going to commit to it. That's all. I mean, it's just being able to have a guard that can navigate and get him out of it pretty quickly. I think where you get dangerous is where, okay, he's kind of not near the level. He's dropping back. And then he's not necessarily protecting the rim. So you kind of get in that in-between area. That's,
yeah,
it's, Vooch can do either of them. It's just when he's stuck in between is where it can kind of look not so great.
Okay. Understood. I'm right there with you. Like, get him near the level, let him use the size, let those guards navigate, and then get him out of there. It's kind of where I'm at as well. I think for me, like, I am intrigued by the fit. We talked about this on the last pod, just his ability to operate as a passer, as a screener, occasional post-up threat. I wanted to see where the shooting was going to go. As you were talking about tales of two games for him, it was very funny against Miami. We're seeing these switches. Give it to me. We're going to get good stuff out of it. Took 1-3 in that game. We get to the New York game. He takes, what, 6, I believe, in that basketball game, where he does get a lot of pick and pops, where they're getting after like Mitchell Robinson and stuff. It's like, okay, cool that he can do both. And this is where my broader question was, like, where exactly does he land on the volume scale is going to be interesting for me to track.
Offensively, I'm glad you brought up the hub stuff because I agree it's not going to be the same volume Chicago because Boston does not need him to be that. But like how they sprinkle that stuff in and when they do so is going to be so interesting to me. For me, like going early second quarter, I want to say, of the Knicks game. He's being guarded by Josh Hart, which also just brings a question to my head. Now my gear's kind of turning now. But early second quarter in that Boston-New York game where he's being defended by Josh Hart because they're going double big with him and Nemias Kata. Flash to the middle of the free throw line to kind of go to that scissors action. Both guys cut through and Vooch is like, okay, actually, I can just attack you because I am bigger than you, Mr. Josh Hart. It's like, okay, this is a mixture of we can sprinkle in these middle of the floor touches, a la like Kristaps when he was there, where it doesn't have to be just high pick and roll, et cetera. We can't just get you a ball against a smaller player, let you work. Has the drives going there. So like that's how we can generate more of like the paint slash rim pressure to kind of counterbalance the volume of threes that we're taking. It's like, okay, this is cool. We know he can hit cutters on top of that. The question that just came to mind for me, Steve, is how, again, it's two games right now for Vooch. Them going double big with Vooch and Kata. Like, how did you feel about that in that New York game? Do you think that is something that Boston is going to continue to tap more into?
You're asking me to get into the mind of Joe Mazzulla, and that's a real dangerous thing because I'm not exactly sure what that man's going to do next. He's a madman. It's why Boston's competing at such a high level. It's why, you know, they could be down 20-plus to Miami and be like, yeah, we're in a good spot. We're going to be just fine, folks. We're good. So I think for me, it's more so, okay, how much does he want to go to the double big? When does he want to go to the double big? Why is he going to the double big? How does that impact it? So I don't necessarily disagree or think, okay, it has to be this. I think that the double big kind of puts Vooch, I don't want to say in a box to a degree, but I think it just is something for Boston to experiment with on both ends of the floor. I don't know if we'll see that as the permanent fixture, to be honest with you. So I don't know if I count on that totally because they made that switch and they may switch again. You never know. It's because double big kind of worked. Then it didn't work. Then it didn't work. So which direction are you going to go with, I think, is the biggest thing for me. So I'm not too into it. How about you? Are you thinking double big is going to be the whole rage for Boston?
Like, I don't think so. Like, when I saw it, I was just kind of like, well, this makes sense. It's Mitchell Robinson and Karl-Anthony Towns on the other side, so you want to size up. And so my mind just kind of went to, are you just matching New York right now so you don't get crushed as Boston, very good offensive rebounding team, not a good defensive rebounding team. And you're facing Mitchell Robinson in and of itself, which that could just be problematic. So, like, how much of that is just that specific lineup versus is this something that Joe Mazzulla actually feels like we can get 3 or 4 minutes a game out of this every night? And again, that's not a high volume, but is this like, okay, is this actually part of the package or you know?
He's been dipping the toe in that, Nikias. He's been dipping the toe in that. Continue.
Okay. So that's where my mind was like, how much of this does he actually want to do when it comes to Vooch plus Kata or Vooch plus Garza, however he wants to kind of sprinkle that in. So figured I'd get your thoughts on that front. But other than that, like, I think the offensive fit is still going to be a clean one. He can just kind of shift through roles. And I think because of where he is right now as a player and ultimately what they gave up to acquire him, it's not like you are boxed into we must play Vooch 32 minutes a game no matter what. Like, I think if he does get to looking like portions of that Knicks game, where as you already mentioned, Jose Alvarado, Jalen Brunson, hey, we are putting you in action and we're going to generate some good stuff. Like, I don't think Joe Mazzulla is going to have much issue saying, hey, big dog, I don't think this is going to be your night or this is not going to be your half. That is A-OK. And I think Vooch even alluded to that. I think after the trade, it was like, I know where I am, what stage of my career I'm in. Like, my role is probably going to change soon. And like, I am OK with that. I just want to do whatever it takes to help my team win type beat. So it's going to be interesting to see that develop on the nights that the defense isn't holding up to your earlier point, Steve. But overall, I can't say I'm surprised by anything I saw. 3-point volume one game, mismatch hunting or mashing smaller players in the other game. When the defense works, we can get out and run. And again, you can have the Vooch delay stuff or just him spacing. He can dive to the basket and generate early attention that way, and it's fine. If it doesn't hit, oh no. That's not super different from what we saw in Chicago. So I'd say it's pretty solid. Oh. I guess since you brought up Jose Alvarado early on. Oh my. But yeah, well, I guess while we're talking Celtics Knicks, how did you feel about the Jose Alvarado debut?
It was good. You know, I thought his defensive activity was really good for New York off ball. His ability to switch and guard multiple positions was important for New York. I thought he was aggressive and fit into what they want to do offensively. And so his ability to kind of cut and space the floor, knock down some threes, get downhill. I just think he kind of fits what they want to do, especially when he's able to guard the primary ball handler and pressure and just gives them a different flow. The more pesky the Knicks are, the more active they are, especially as Mike Brown likes these three-guard lineups. But I think his communication, especially on the weak side, you kind of saw it stand out, especially him and Jalen Brunson. If they were together, he was like, hey, Jalen, you get out of here. I'll take the low man. Or if they tried to attack Jalen Brunson, he's like, no, you get out of here. I'll take this switch. I'll take this matchup. And so I just think that overall ethos is going to help the Knicks. It's one of those things where I think he's going to win them a game in the playoffs with his activity on both ends of the floor.
No, I'm right there with you. Like, I'm glad you brought up the defense early on because, like, naturally – you're talking Jose Alvarado. It's going to be the high pressure. We're going to get into your jersey. At some point, we're going to get like the I am sneaking behind you steal and the guard's going to lose it, et cetera. But like the off-ball stuff and his willingness to make those low man rotations, to get in there, flash the hands, take charges when necessary. Like, I think that's going to pop for a New York defense that, as you've mentioned quite a few times so far this season, Steve, their help and their activity overall is very important to kind of establishing that base and giving them the baseline of defense that they need to make sure that the offense pops on the other end. Jose is a quality fit already. Like, the drive's already interesting to me. And the fact that when they go to these smaller lineups, you have a consistent dose of someone that can get all the way into the paint or get to the rim and kind of increase those cracks for the other guys to attack, I think it's going to be super helpful. When you get to some of those hybrid units and some of those three-guard lineups, I'm just kind of in already on Jose. Like, I like the deal when it was made, considering what New York had to give up. Didn't see much in that opening game against Boston to make me think like, oh, actually, I might need to tone down this excitement. Keeping an eye on the shot, but like other than that, like I think Jose's going to be a great fit in New York.
No, I mean, I think the confidence he plays with is huge. Like the end of the third quarter play where he protected Brunson was big, but like in the first quarter, it's like, hey, I'm just going to take whatever happens, but it ends up being like stack pick and roll. He's like, hey, Mitch, you take that. Jalen, you get out of here. I'll get your help. Him doing that kind of stuff is valuable for New York, a team that, you know, even if they simplify their coverages and they're trying to keep the ball on the side and they're, you know, trying to send pick and roll in one direction, they need to have an effort off ball on the weak side, an activity off ball on the weak side. I think he brings that with the ball pressure. So that combination, I think, can lift some different lineups for them. And then they can just keep some really strong defensive personnel out there for a lot. So I think his moxie, especially once he plays in the Garden, will be fun to see kind of grow. But I like the move so far. He fits exactly, I think, what Mike Brown has been looking for off the bench. And I, you know, it's a shame we can't watch him and Deuce McBride kind of bother people at the same time. We'll have to settle for him and Landry being annoying.
Can I ask you a bit? I guess I don't even know if it qualifies as a free throw. But, like, how are you absorbing this Landry Shamet season? He's been really good for New York. It's also been kind of like troublesome to me in some areas. Like, you should not need this level of Landry Shamet with the rosters that you have right now. But he has been nails on both ends of the floor in a way that I just did not anticipate.
Yeah, he's done his job. Hey, by the way, defensively, I'm just going to be really annoying. I'm going to deny. I'm going to do all things that we are not doing. And I'm going to knock down shots. And how many other people are doing that consistently that are not in your top 5-6? Exactly. That's right. Play me more. And so it's more so he has provided something that the Knicks have needed, and he's continued to do it. So him being consistent has been fantastic for New York. So I think it's more of a salute to Landry Shamet than the Knicks being like a deficit as we need this. I think it's just a tip of the cap to Landry Shamet for me.
No, he's done his thing. 43% from three this year, and as you mentioned, the defense has been strong. Like, he's been closing some games for them. Like, it's, I thought Landry Shamet was going to be solid depth piece. Can knock down some shots from the quarter for you, and he's just been very important to what they've been wanting to do. So just wanted to give the quick hat tip to Landry Shamet. Also, first game for Jose Alvarado, plus 13 in 25 minutes because, of course, he is, as mentioned on the last pod, across, what, 5 years in New Orleans. They won his minutes, despite the team looking very different and dealing with lots of different injuries, culture changes, et cetera. Like, he just impacts winning. So I think that is going to fit. Okay, while we're talking about guards, Steve, Ayo Dosunmu has now logged a couple of games with the Minnesota Timberwolves, one of the more underrated slash impactful deals of deadline week, in my opinion. But against the Clippers, 11 points, a steal, two blocks against the Clippers, 21 points against the Atlanta Hawks. And I think the Hawks game in particular is where you get to see oh, this is the Ayo Dosunmu experience. Like, I can pressure the ball. I can be active defensively. Offensively, I can initiate some stuff if you need me to. I can go second side pick and roll if you need me to. Second side handoff if necessary. Off the ball, knock down shots if you need me to. I can allot the cutting. Whenever there is a miss or a turnover, just find me. I am jetting the ball up the floor. And I can take advantage of your tilted defense already. It's just a lot of the stuff that I was excited to see with Ayo in Minnesota. And I'm glad we got to see that in that Hawks game because the Clipper game, that very quickly turned into the Kawhi Leonard experience, as he has just been insane for like 2.5-3 months at this point. But I've enjoyed what I've seen from Ayo so far. How have you felt about the Ayo experience?
Not surprising. This is one of my favorite moves of the deadline. And so the early thoughts I had in the Clippers performance is, okay, he's going to be active on defense. He's going to be switchable. And I think the drives and transition, those will pop. And so I think we saw first game, jitters feels too strong, but first game I'm trying to fit in. I think second game, more of an understanding of, okay, this is what they need from me on both ends of the floor. And so you saw some of those secondary drives a little bit more. You saw a bit more of the aggression. You saw a bit more, I'm pushing the ball up quicker to get us into something. I think, again, he just unlocks their lineup versatility. And so if you're able to play him, Anthony Edwards, and Jalen McDaniels together, that's a lot of size, especially if you go two bigs. You can always go one big, you know, for Rudy Gobert's out there. So I think the biggest thing for him is him being able to fit into what they want to do on both ends of the floor and unlocking their ability to play more people together. That's huge for me. And so it hasn't necessarily been surprising, but it's been fun to watch him kind of grow. And now we'll see where it goes next, because he doesn't necessarily need the ball in his hands, even though he can help, you know. And so you can kind of have this ability where Jalen McDaniels is able to get a stagger and play out of it. He can get a stagger and play out of it. If there's defense and rotation because of Anthony Edwards, he can kind of space the floor and play out of it. So that's where the overall, hey, this could help them now and later, fits for me.
I think to that end, Steve, as you bring up just kind of like the different lineup combinations that Minnesota can get to now, it brings back to Ayo's like 6'5". Why are we strong with like a 6'10 wingspan? Like, Minnesota can go 3 guard, and they have gone 3 guard and 3.5 guard with some of these lineups across these 2 games featuring Ayo. And it's like, well, yeah, like Ayo could probably just defend some 3s sometimes because of how lengthy he is. And so, like, seeing Ant, Dante, Ayo, Jaden McDaniels, and Rudy, it's like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Or even when they go with, like, Nas and Julius in the front court and you still have those 3s, it's just like, this is technically a small lineup, but, like, you're not going to have fun against it. Like, all these dudes are pretty physical or pretty active. And if they can nail what they want their defense to be, because, like, what you taught, something that you mentioned during the defensive trends episode that we did, you mentioned them going zone with Jaden McDaniels. Like, hey, if Ayo can hold up, we could be a little more switchable. We may not have to press the zone button as often in those lineups, and that could be more of a changeup versus we kind of need this to hit to protect these 2 bigs and hope they miss some 3s and we can get out and run. If they could be more solid, that unlocks more productivity from that group, that unlocks another level of lineup versatility from Minnesota, and I think that's going to be super helpful for them. Can I ask you a broad Minnesota question? Because they are coming off of this Hawks win, but that's following the Clippers loss. And that Clippers loss followed, like, another loss in which Rudy Gobert was like, hey, man, this effort is not going to cut it. And, like, if the players aren't going to be accountable, then maybe the coaches need to make sure that we are accountable, et cetera. And Chris Finch is like, well, I don't really like that he did that publicly. How do we keep ending up here with the Minnesota Timberwolves? I feel like it was a good start. Ant was out. They hit Treadwater, did well. They go on a run, then they lose some games. They go on another run, then they lose more games. Like, we're not too far removed from, like, the 5-game losing streak from them that was recently broke. Where are you at with the Timberwolves?
This is who they are. They play down to the level of their opponent far too often. That's just who they are. It's the only thing holding them back from their momentum. We know the playoff base. We know the reputation. We know what they can do on both ends of the floor. When they want to do it, they look very good. When they don't want to do it, they get beat. I think it's simple.
It's matter, very matter of fact.
Where are you at with the Wolves? Because it's not like this complicated vision for me. Yeah, they didn't take the Clippers seriously. Got beat. You know what I mean? We've seen this before. Didn't take New Orleans series. Got beat. Didn't take Memphis series. Got beat. All their losses are usually to bad teams.
it's so odd. Like, y'all are coming off of back-to-back conference finals appearances. it's like, to your point, like, do I think it's difficult to figure out, hey, when they playing down to their competition, the offense can get stagnant, the defense, the off-ball defense in particular, can get wonky in these losses? Like, no, like, you watch the games, you can pick out what's happening. It's less what is happening and more like, why does this keep happening? Like, I think that's where you get into the Rudy post-game comments and then the Chris Finch comments and like some of the Ant stuff. When he's asked about, hey, what's going on? It's like, well, going earlier in the year, when it's just like, well, I guess this is just Minnesota. This is just Timberwolves basketball, I guess, when we have these nights. I'm just like, why is that the case? Y'all are so good. The high end is so good. Like, as I'm talking about this Clippers loss, and you mentioned Memphis and Brooklyn, the other teams they lost to, like, they just beat the Thunder. Like, now it's this version of the Thunder where they're missing a bunch of folks. But, like, this is a good basketball team. I would like for them to just settle in on being very good on both ends of the floor, because I think it is just, it's there for them.
It's just pre-All-Star break, man. You can't take these results that seriously. It's pre-All-Star break, man. Just bring it in. It's okay. They're going to be fine. They have one game for the All-Star break, and then we'll see them, you know, in a few days. They're sixth.
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah,
I know you're stuck on the principle.
I am. I sure am. You asked me where am I with the Timberwolves. I'm annoyed with the Timberwolves. That's my official answer right now, Steve. Y'all are better than this. You have shown that you can be better than this. That's why pretty much half the locker room is on the wall.
You have two Minnesota Timberwolves thoughts. Rudy Gobert is awesome. I'm annoyed with them. That's it. There's nothing else that's in between. We sure are holding him accountable for the defense during this stretch. Now, are we?
We sure can, because this hasn't been the same Rudy either.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, buddy, them drop rips ain't hitting the same. Late switches ain't hitting the same. I'm seeing the offensive rebounding against Memphis. No, Rudy's not blameless in this. I'll put my hand up. I'm saying this like I'm a Wolves fan or something, but like, yeah, I'll put my hand up. No, this hasn't been perfect Rudy either. But like, Rudy's doing this stuff. You get the possessions like clips circulating timeline. You watch a Wolves game, there's going to be a possession where Ant is just standing flat-footed off the ball. And if someone cuts or relocates in any way, Ant's like, oh, snap, I guess I need to pick that guy up, huh? I mean, all the stuff. Julius will still, as good as Julius has been, like, Julius will still have, like, the no-pass possessions or jack up some nonsense, or he'll have some of his defensive lapses. Like, it's everyone, to be clear. But, like, get that together. Get that together. You're good. That's it. Sorry. Didn't mean to go on the full Wolves field. So we'll switch to the team that traded Ayo Dosunmu. Steve, a lot of different players making their debuts or have early thoughts with Chicago Bulls. Anthony Simons, Jaden Ivey, Gershon Yabusele, Colin Sexton, Rob Dillingham, Nick Richards. We don't have to talk about all six if you don't like to. If you wouldn't like to. Has anyone in particular from the group, from the new addition, stood out to you? What have you liked from them?
Gershon Yabusele would be like, yeah, this is a new context. I'm fine. I'm playing for my life. Let me go ahead and set some screens and let me not be in this New York context. Let me get back to playing hoop the way I know how to play. Yeah, I can drive. I can shoot. I can do more than that to do. Let's hoop it up a little bit. That's been the biggest one. What about you with the 9,000 guards that the Chicago Bulls have added to their roster?
So I want to talk about Anthony Simons, but first to the Yabusele bit, a quick stat for you, Steve, because of course I had to look this up, because I have also noted this has been a lot more screening for Yabusele. This has been a lot more like I'm initiating handoffs, a lot more middle flashes, etc. So just on the screen setting front, during his tenure as a New York Knick, he set 57 on-ball screens. In three games with the Chicago Bulls, he has set 66 already. But obviously, that's like a playing time deal. But to the usage point, like, yeah, man. What also cracks me up about this, because while I am, like, happy for him and, like, he is doing the right thing, it is also frying me just how many of his screens are just switches. It's like, well, I'm not sure what this is going to be outside of, hey, guard, it is time to cook. One person who may not mind that, however, Steve, is Anthony Simons, who has certainly done his best to cook. Across these three games, 20 points per game, he is converting 80% of his shots inside the arc. Shooting 34% from three on ridiculous volume. Has not missed a free throw, but he also hasn't taken all that many. Five assists for Anthony Simons. What fried me, one, the Brooklyn game where he comes off this handoff, basically gets trapped with how Brooklyn guards, and he's like, hey, what if I just dribble the other way and take a fading three, like I'm using a Zen in 2K or something, we just green that? I was like, okay, well, this is an Anthony Simons shot if I've ever seen one. But you brought now. You can see where he slots into with some of the early attacks. Like, Chicago still wants to play with the level of pace and the level of tempo. And, like, I think he's done a pretty solid job of mixing in some of the ISO booging that we've become accustomed to in Portland and in Boston, where I can get a switch or I just have a matchup and this is going to stop. I can score anyway. And actually, I can just get downhill real quick. And if I don't have it, I have Jaden Ivey or I have Colin Sexton or anyone else, and we can flow into something else. Like, he's very much trying to find that balance between being aggressive and keeping the chains moving. And with how small Chicago has trended with some of their lineups, when you do get some of the, I'm going to attack, I don't have it, I'm kicking, I'm now respacing, we can sprinkle in some cutting around this as well. You see some interesting Chicago offense possessions. It's like, okay, I see the vision of how this could be annoying. And if you come into Chicago or you're facing the Bulls on a night where your defense is a locked in, you might just get diced up by all these dudes that can attack tilted defenses. And in a worst case scenario, I'm comfortable driving against somebody bigger than me because I'm faster and shiftier than them. And so it's been cool watching Anthony Simons in that regard. Now, to the Chicago Bulls defense during this stretch, Steve, have not liked it. I will put that kindly. I can't say I was expecting all that much, especially with how small their lineups trend at this point, but it gets kind of funny. Like, they can switch themselves into some nonsense very quickly. But I have overall been intrigued by the Anthony Simons experience. Jaden Ivey, I think, because you made the joke about it on the last pod, where guards in new spots, let me play the right way, let me not be super aggressive. I think Jaden Ivey's aggression is starting to perk up. But you're also seeing some of the, let me pass, let me cut, let me set an off-ball screen. Like, there's just a little bit of, I'm going to see if I can find an opportunity to make life easier for someone else. That's been popping for Jaden Ivey for me, where, I appreciate that. And I think on the high end, that's really going to help Chicago in the half court. So that part's been interesting. And Nick Richards just kind of been a monster off the bench. It's very funny to go from Yabu, we're smaller, we're switching, we're going to use him as a screener, et cetera. And then here comes Nick Richards. Let me just bully you on the offensive glass real quick. Let me just hit somebody. A steal and a half and a block and a half in this game so far in Chicago. That part's been funny. So I started with Anthony Simons and ran through a whole bunch of folks. So my apologies for being yappy, but interesting stuff happening in Chicago right now. Why is the Bulls-Nuggets game, by the way, if you haven't already? I know you probably have, but just for our listeners, if you have League Pass, very funny basketball game. Very much a tale of two halves, but that was a funny one. Ow. Did you have any other Bulls thoughts before we move to somebody else?
Well, I was just going to start with that's why Yabu didn't set a lot of screens in New York, because it was a switch. It's kind of by default in Chicago because we don't really have that many bigs. We have a bunch of guards. So I think he's just kind of involved more by default. But you went ahead and cooked, man. So continue on. What else you got, brother?
My bad. So, couple of guards that I want to ask you about more than anything, because we haven't seen high volume of usage or anything like that. Jarrett McCain, who scored 12 points across his two games in OKC so far. Kevin Huerter, who's scored 8 points across 27 minutes in three games for Detroit so far. And I was certainly expecting to see a little bit more of Kevin in particular so far. Just what kind of ramp up do you anticipate with Jarrett / Kevin Huerter? Or have there been anything that's kind of flashed for you early on?
The Thunder shouldn't have Jarrett McCain. That's what's flashed to me. That guy shouldn't be there. He shouldn't be an Oklahoma City Thunder. That's not how this should work. They shouldn't just be able to casually be like, yeah, you know what? Let's bring Jarrett McCain in for these 4, 5, 6 minutes, get a dribble handoff, get a pull-up, or just go ahead and make a three, and then drive and kick to get to another one. That should be an option. It should be part of the program. You should not be able to lift some of these second-unit lineups, especially with the current state they're in. But I think it's just a reminder of how good of a trade that is, because he fits what they want to do. Even if he's not the Jared McCain that we've known from his rookie year, he's getting back to health. Yeah, he can drive. He can kick. He can make threes. That means a lot more in Oklahoma City. And so if you could sprinkle him in for a few minutes here or there on top of the talent they have, especially as they're getting guys back, it's only helpful. It's only positive. Anything he does this year is additive. I think next year is where you're like, oh, let's go off to the races. The Kevin Huerter portion, I think it's less him and more just, okay, we have a dog pound mentality. We got a lot of people that have earned minutes. So it's hard for me to just give you minutes as much as I would like to play you. I think for me, it's, you nailed it on the last pod as far as his ability to play a two-man game. I think it's fun to see J.B. Bickerstaff always liking to run sets for shooters. I think the advantage that Huerter has is his ability to kind of turn the corner and put the ball on the floor and make that next play afterwards. And so I think Duncan Robinson kind of gets more of the gravity because, ooh, we don't want him to shoot. Kevin Huerter is more like, okay, I have this space. I can now make a play out of it. And so I think just having him as a dynamic person helps Detroit. But that's about it.
Okay, I'm right there with you. Like, similar views for me when it comes to McCain. Like, this is very much a next year move more than anything. If we need to, like, move off of Isaiah Joe's contract or something like that, Jared McCain can now just slot in and be our reserve guard that can handle and initiate offense for us and knock down shots all over the place. The Kevin Herter bit. Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, there may be more minutes opening up in Detroit. Because I would imagine you were able to catch Detroit Charlotte, which shedding a singular tier for Charlotte, having the 9-game win streak snap against Detroit. But we had some antics in that basketball game. And I would imagine that there are going to be a few players that we are not going to see for a little bit. This starts with Musa Diabate. I mean, those two were just kind of battling it out all game anyway. They are two of the more physical centers that we have in the league. But we get a hard foul from Musa Diabate. We get Musa putting forehead to forehead of Jalen Duren. Jalen Duren did not take kindly to that. He kind of grabs the head slash face of Musa Diabate. He certainly didn't like that. And then we are off to the races. Steve.
Hey, man. Hey. Everyone wearing a long sleeve shirt should be ashamed of themselves. How you let all these people break contain? What are y'all doing, man? There's 19 of y'all out here. None of y'all can control one person. And now you let it escalate to the point where Beef Stew did another stampede. Like, what are y'all doing? You just see clusters of long black shirts, but y'all ain't holding nobody back. You see Duncan Robinson's face once he realized, oh, Beef Stew has swung. Dang, this is tough for me. This is not great. You see LaMelo Ball be like, oh, this is very serious. Let me flee to the baseline. You see Hugo?
Hugo just walking through like, man, what's going on? Oh.
See, here's the thing, though. Like, Beef Stew, you can't leave the bench, so you're going to get hit pretty hard. And Musa Diabate, you can't fall into the fans. I don't know what you was doing. I don't know what you was on. You can't do the headbutt and then do another surge and then fall into the fans. Nah, man. Come on. This is, hey, y'all should get your tackling skills up. Every one of you in a Nike tech, get your skills up. Right? It's ridiculous.
Oh, do better. Tell you what, man. We putting on the Jeff Van Gundy tape. Grab a leg. You know what I mean? We got to make sure these guys can't do what happened there. I think anytime you have any kind of skirmish, I think even to the Musa thing to kind of kick things off, he's kind of leaned the head in, whatever. Like, you don't do that. Like, naturally, Jalen Duren or any person is not going to take kindly to that. But I think, you know, you see enough of these skirmishes across the NBA where you have a face-to-face thing. It is very much a, everybody comes around, let's pull them apart, they join at each other, and it just kind of is what it is. Maybe it's a double tech, and then we're off to the races. The face grab ignited something in Musa Diabate that I'm not sure even he knew he had. That brother was mad for like 18 consecutive minutes, to your point about the charge and then falling into the fans and then another charge, gets held back, swim move like he's a defensive end, another charge before finally being held back by like 8 people. And then the second wave with Miles Bridges not taking kindly to Jalen Duren talking, and then Beef Stew didn't take kindly to the cheap shot from Mr. Bridges. And second wave, Isaiah Stewart just always being ready for something like this is a little bit funny. Understandable.
We mean it's funny. He's always ready. He's always ready. You know this about him. What do you mean? You know your teammates. You know who's about that action. You know what he's about. It's almost bad because Jalen Duren's decision to actually let me not do this somehow escalated this. If they had just grabbed each other's jerseys, this would have been over. If they had done what Chris Dunn did to Julius Randle, which, by the way, I still don't know why Chris Dunn did all that. That man pushed Julius Randle, said, get out of the way again, and then grabbed him by his jersey. I'm like, if you had just done that, this thing would have been over.
Yeah. It's just your run-of-the-mill skirmish during a physical basketball game. But there you have it. I'm sure we'll be getting suspension news, if not later today, as we record on this Tuesday morning, then certainly on Wednesday. So we will see what happens on that front. Speaking of news, Steve. So Cam Thomas was waived on deadline day. It's like, huh, this is interesting. Asked you, hey, how do you feel about some of these spots with Cam Thomas?
I didn't like any of them.
Didn't like any of them. Understood. Like, Cam Thomas, very talented scorer. Everything else, you at least raised the brow a bit. And if you see how the minutes were handled during the Brooklyn tenure, et cetera, like, it's understandable that there are some questions about Cam Thomas's fit on court, despite his immense scoring talent. Cam Thomas, now a member of the Milwaukee Bucks. And I am intrigued that they were one of the tier one teams. It's like, tier one was, hey, we need to get this guy in the building. Like, let's let's lay a claim on the waiver wire or whatever. Like, we need to try to get Cam Thomas if we can. Tier two is like, let's have a meeting and see how we feel about this type beat. Milwaukee is tier one for me. I think the scoring can certainly help while they deal with the Giannis absence at the very least. Now, again, the defense leaves a good bit to be desired. Jordy Fernandez was not very pleased with the inconsistency of Cam Thomas's defensive effort. This Milwaukee defense has not been good this year, to put it lightly. And so I am curious to see like what the Doc Rivers leash is going to be with Cam Thomas defensively. But I do think he can give them some offense. And if you were projecting this team when Giannis eventually makes his return, I guess if he makes his return, hey, man, like, we should at least be able to get some buckets in the non-Giannis minutes. And so, like, there is the benefit there. Did you have, after thinking about it a little bit, Steve, do you have any thoughts about Cam Thomas's fit in Milwaukee?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, Cam Thomas, we wish you the best in Milwaukee. So quick all-star news. Alperen Sengun replacing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as he is dealing with the lower body injury. Kawhi Leonard also going to be a part of the all-star festivities after not initially being named as a reserve, which still surprises me, honestly, with how ridiculous Kawhi Leonard has been playing this year. But nonetheless, those guys are in. We're going to have some roster shifting as we talk about Team World with these guys out. But wanted to give the news nugget there. Were you surprised by Sengun / Kawhi being named to the game? We're going to have deeper all-star conversations on Friday, but just wanted to get your quick thoughts there before you move.
No. I had Sengun as an all-star, even though he had kind of dipped. And Kawhi has played at a high level for the Clippers. So it's been fantastic.
Okay. The NBA is fantastic. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we return, we talk about the recent action in Unrivaled. We have a trade in Unrivaled, which is not a thing that I anticipated having to say on this podcast. And the one-on-one field has been announced. The bracket has been announced officially, Steve. One-on-one action kicking off on Wednesday. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to talk a little bit about Unrivaled. We had two teams punch their tickets officially to this year's playoffs. The Laces, you are in. The Phantom, you are in. And I think broad takeaways for me, at least outside of the two teams clinching, actually, I want to focus in on the Phantom a little bit. As one, they are very good. They are very deep. They are balanced. The lineup optionality is fun, particularly when they go double big. I am just kind of ready to be reckless about Aliyah Boston. Complimentary. She has just had an incredible season, first and foremost. And naturally, her skill set can pop in a three-on-three format. The screens, the seals, you just get easy stuff, the pick-and-roll play. The three-point shooting, as it continues to perk up as the season goes on, is super intriguing to me. Like, the shooting touch is there. She experimented with some threes last year with the Fever. I would imagine that progression is going to continue. Like, I don't think she's going to be taking 5 or 6 a game. But it's going to surprise me if it's like the Asia Wilson year, her first year under Becky, where it's like 2.5 or 3. Like, that wouldn't shock me at all. And I just think if Aliyah is already a good defender, offensively, you get the early seal work, you get the screening work, you get the playmaking work. And then you also add on 3-point shooting on top of this. Like, I felt like she was a top 10 player last year. And that reflected in some of the player rankings that I wrote about with Bleacher Report last season. Like, does she just become a top 6 player in the league this year? Top 5 player in the league this year whenever we have a W season? Because I'm kind of, like, excited to see what she's about to take from this Unrivaled format into the next W season. She's just really good.
All right. One, I thought you were going to talk about Kiki because of your shirt. Two, I have a question. is she the best player? Is she the best player on the Indiana Fever? Is she the best player on the Phantom?
Wow. Best player on the Phantom, I say yes. She was just flat out the best player on the Fever last year. So, like, I'm not opposed.
No, I'm talking about this year. Going into this year.
She right, the best going into this year? Fever.
Yeah.
I don't think that's unfair. I say that with the caveat that, like, tell you what, man. If the offense rounds out like this, she will just be, like, I think she'd be their best two-way player.
Is she the best player on the Fever?
I can get there, yeah.
So she is.
Yeah, I say yeah.
Say put the whole sentence together.
This guy tried to get me hemmed up. Like, yeah, I think Aaliyah Boston is Indiana's best player right now.
All right, thank you. So Kelsey Plum, by the way, is just destroying worlds for the Phantom. And mm-hmm. I think her mm-hmm. getting should be respected at a higher level. You don't just get 30 and 28 like this every single time in this format without getting that done. So I think the hashtag should be MB Plum. I'm going to repeat that. I think it's real interesting. The Breeze funny team, I pretty much called that Hive game on the pod. I'm going to pat myself on the back. So I was like, hey, can the Hive annoy the Breeze for three quarters and then win? And then they did. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the Breeze can be serious for three quarters in this format at any point in time, if they want to get that done. The Mist remain the funniest team in the competition because I think they can beat anyone and they can defend against anyone and then they will not score and then they just do not have a good time. But it gets interesting because between like Breeze, Rose, Vinyl, Hive, do you feel super confident about any of these teams? And is that not the beauty of this format?
To answer the second question first, yes, that is the beauty of this format. Because as we saw, even going back to last year, like the Rose weren't world beaters. We would talk about the Lunar Isles as they were just taking off on everybody. And, you know, it's in the inaugural season, so, like, everything's a record. But it's just like, oh, they are just far and away the best team in the league. And then they lose early. And it's like, oh, Rose catch rhythm at the right time. Chelsea Gray is insane. And they end up winning the title. So I don't want to, you know, give a death knell to anyone. So that does add to the excitement. But to the first question, no, I don't really know what to make of this group. Because I think when the Rose play well and Chelsea's at a certain level and Ka's at a certain level and the Bigs are versatile and they can sprinkle in their lineup versatility, they can beat anyone. And if the game is close in a fourth quarter and you go into that target score, like, I don't know if there's anyone I'd want to see less than Chelsea Gray. And so they just kind of have to get there to win. But the defense has been inconsistent. They've dealt with some injuries. They're now dealing with a trade that we'll get into in a little bit, and we'll see what that actually means for them moving forward. And it's just like, huh, I don't know what to do with any of this. You talk about the Breeze. Paige Bueckers has been phenomenal. the Bigs have been versatile. Like, the defense has popped for Cam. Defense can pop for Don Belonga. Offensively, pick and roll, pick and pop, can get busy on the offensive glass. That gets fun. Rekia Jackson, when she's there. All of my prayers to Rekia Jackson, by the way. Inside-out threat, the defense is perked up, the playmakers perked up, etc. On the high end, the Breeze can beat anybody and have proven they can beat anybody. But then, if the defense is not together, or, you know, as we talked about that Hive matchup heading in, like, one of the things I brought up was like, hey, like, I think in a vacuum, like, Dom and Cam, they may be better than Monique Billings. The way that Monique Billings plays, that motor, the body type difference, I think Monique Billings could be a problem in this particular matchup. And sure enough, here we go with Monique Billings with 15 and 17 in that game. Breeze didn't have a good time. Like, the interior can get a little squishy. And, like, the shot profile is going to be the shot profile of this group. So it's just like, I don't know. Like, it's the middle is very interesting. Well, Steven, and we have another, I'm right back to being confused by what the Vinyl are and how good they can be. Like, last week, I had some concerns about the offense, and then they go undefeated that following weekend. It's like, okay, cool. Scoring's perking up, timely baskets. The defense is really good. And then we have this weekend where they once again cannot score in key moments. It's 66 against the Rose, and it's 73 against the Phantom. And even then, like, the offense kind of died in the second half. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what to do with them. Last thing I'll say before we get into this actual trade. To the Mist point, like, the drives, when you asked me about their offense, was where I was like, okay, I see you. I'm not super concerned yet because they can just get downhill. They can mismatch hunt. Then they played the Phantom, in which Breanna Stewart mismatch hunting was kind of the only thing they had, as Alicia Gray didn't have it. And boy, was she fed up with the non-calls on her drive. She was not a happy camper. But Alicia Gray didn't have it. Veronica Burton didn't have it, and probably more taxing to the Mist. Whenever she was off the ball, they did not care where she was. We are sending help towards whoever is in the paint. That is concerning. It's like, ooh, they kind of need jumpers to complement the drives in the mismatch hunt they can get into. Also, quick salute to Arike Ogunbowale, 29 points against the Rose, and yet another blowout loss for the Rose. Averaging 17 on 52, 39, 89 splits over her last seven games. They have needed her scoring as of late. I wonder if we eventually get, like, a lineup change to kind of spark the offense if Veronica Burton doesn't perk back up on that front. So we'll keep an eye on that. Steve, to the trade. We had a So technically a four-team deal, as it is Courtney Williams going to the Breeze from the Vinyl. It is Saniya Rivers going from the Vinyl to the Hive, or going from the Hive to the Vinyl. And what a fun debut she had. Azaree Stevens goes from the Rose to the Hive. And then we're just kind of waiting on Rose BC. There's been speculation about them adding to their roster. Angel Reese was on the team last year. Angel Reese was like recently visiting the facility. Like, I don't know if that is the thing that is happening, so I am not reporting that. But like, that is some of the speculation at the very least. But like, right now, they're just kind of hammering away with five healthy players right now. And they notably did not acquire a player in this trade. So I'm curious to see what the Rose are going to look like. Probably well timed for this trade to happen for them, as we are now heading right to the one-on-one tournament. So we don't have to worry about team play for a little bit. But how did you feel about this trade announcement, Steve? Who do you think won this one?
The fans.
Okay.
I think it's an interesting swap, because I think the Hive needed some more juice offensively, and Azaree gives them some versatility. I think Courtney Williams joining the Breeze is just fun in general. And so Saniya in a different environment, I think it'll be interesting with the Vinyl, with what they do on both ends of the floor defensively. How does that fit? And so I think it's just nice to kind of like have teams that are, okay, this isn't quite working to a degree, be able to add something else that could help them in a different way. I do find it interesting that your eyes went to the one team that was not truly involved as far as getting a player. So you went from principle to speculation very quickly, but we'll leave that there.
Fun stuff. It's not like Rose get cash considerations or like a future second round pick or something. Like, I don't, at least that wasn't announced at the release. I'm just kind of confused. Like, hey, what does this mean? Like, what? It also just brought me into like the loop of, okay, what are the unrivaled trade rules? Like, because like the salaries aren't public or anything like that. So it's like, is there salary matching involved here? Like, do we have a hard cut? Like, what is, I just didn't think that we were going to be covering a trade. So that part was just interesting to me, Steve. Now, to the one-on-one tournament, I revealed my vote and how I would have the bracket on the last episode. We now have the official bracket. We can go pod by pod, Steve. We can start with pod A to talk about some of these fascinating matchups. We do have Kelsey Mitchell and Rachel Bannerman in the 1-8. We have Courtney Williams and Veronica Burton in the 4-5. And on the other side of the bracket, we have Skylar Diggins and Jordan Canada. And we also have Kelsey Plum and Natisha Heidemann. Of those four matchups, Steve, where does your eye go first? What are you most intrigued by in the Pod A matchups?
Courtney Williams against Veronica Burton. Because I feel like that's going to be Courtney Williams pull-ups, or I'm going to try and drive Veronica Burton. Absolutely not. I'm not going to let you. I'm going to try an Eurostep. And it could go back and forth and get very competitive very quickly. So that is the one that I would like to see the most from Pod A. What about you?
Similar vein for me in terms of the competitiveness. Skylar versus Jordan, I think, is going to be a very good time. If you just want to see drives and incredible physicality at the point of attack defensively. And I think if there is a foul that goes the wrong way, like either one of them could just turn up immediately. Let me just reel off four straight baskets since you're trying to guard me like this type beat. A lot of potential in that particular matchup. So Courtney Veronica's right there for me as well. Skylar Diggins, Jordan Canada. It's probably the one that I'm keeping the closest eye on. But it is a fascinating bracket, the way that it broke out. Let's move to Pod B. We do have Paige Beckers as your one seed in Pod B, taking on Kate Martin. Arike Ogunbowale versus Brittany Sykes in the 4-5 there. And then on the other side of the bracket, Jackie Young and Tiffany Hayes, former Aces teammates. And then we have Chelsea Gray and Natasha Cloud in a battle of, yeah, I'm a guard. I can play the four because I'm strong and I have quick hands. Seeing them face off against each other in this matchup is incredibly fascinating to me, Steve. And frankly, I think that's probably the matchup that I'm most excited about. Which one catches your eye?
Grant Cloud get real competitive. Jackie Young and Tiff Hayes get real drivey. I'm going on Rike and Brittany Sykes. That's some real competitive fire that I feel is going to happen as far as who's going to decide, okay, that's one of those that's going to start one way and turn to something else. So I'm intrigued to see who decides to drive, who hits the step backs. Like, who is it, someone jump out to a big lead? Like, what does that look like? I'm really into the 4-5s.
I was just about to say, the 4-5s are really speaking to you, Steve. I appreciate it. All right, we can move to Pod C then. Again, Chelsea Gray versus Natasha Cloud should just be a really good time. So we'll see what that looks like. In Pod C, we have Alicia Gray and Sanaya Rivers in the 1-8. We have Kalia Copper and Rakia Jackson in the 4-5. On the other side of the bracket, we have Marina Mabry and Sonya Citron. And in the 2-7, we have Ryan Howard and Ray Burrell. And this is the one that bugged me personally. I'm like, man, I nailed these matchups and didn't nail the seeding. Gosh darn it. But no, in all seriousness, and you talked about this on the last pod, like just the wing slash forward pod is just my favorite in terms of these matchups anyway. But for me, if we get Kyle versus Rakia, like that's probably gonna be number one. If not, Ryan versus Ray Burrell is gonna be a fascinating one. That is just a lot of size at the wing, whose drives are going to hit, who wants to drive in that particular matchup to be a good time. That I probably lean more towards the 2-7 in that one, Steve. Which matchup intrigues you the most from that pod?
Marina Mabry against Sonya Citron. That's the one for me. I feel like that could go any which way, and I am ready to see it happen. That's what I'd like to see.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Which leads us into Pod D. We got the big man pal, Steve, Pod Steve. Breonna Stewart versus Lee Yuru in the 1-8. Aaliyah Boston versus Alyssa Thomas in the 4-5. On the other side of the bracket, De'Erica Hamby and Shakira Austin in the 3-6. And we have Aaliyah Edwards and Dominique Malanga in the 2-7. If you ask me which matchups I like, the answer is yes. If I had to choose one, I may have to steal your gimmick, Steve. Aaliyah Boston and Alyssa Thomas in the 4-5. It is going to be physical. I think it's going to be hard fought. I think Aaliyah wins that one. But I guess for me, and it goes back to the last spot we had, I'm just intrigued to see what Alyssa Thomas looks like in this format, period. Because she can absolutely guard just about anyone. But like what the scoring package is going to look like here in a one-on-one set is going to be interesting. But I think that's where my eyes go. What say you, good sir?
Well, you took my matchup, so I'm going to go with the Lee Yuru Cinderella run starts early.
Oh, my.
Calling it now.
Okay. You think we're getting a bunch of Lee Yuru post-ups and Breonna Stewart goes down early again? Is that the official
just prediction? Saying, I'm just saying, Lee could make it real interesting real quick. I'm calling Lee as a winner. Yeah, I said it now. Take that.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. And again, the one-on-one tournament is starting on Wednesday night. It is actually starting with the Chelsea Gray and Natasha Cloud matchup, 7 Eastern. So make sure you tune in on that front. And with that, Steve, we head on home. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. That's where you can find all of our stuff, full pods, breakout clips, some shorts as well. We have a lot of fun over there. You can follow me on socials at NakaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.